This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, was having trouble finding a qualified director of coffee for his organic coffee company. He posted his job on ZipRecruiter.com and used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applications. Miskowitz found his new director of coffee in just a few days. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Vox. That's ZipRecruiter.com/VOX. ZipRecruiter.com/Vox. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lines in deep left field. It is gone! Hit left. Deep right. Batista's going to win.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 137. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, we'll talk about Yasiel Puig marching to the beat of his own drum, Francisco Lindor is apparently not the best shortstop in baseball, Charlie Friendly had a crazy contract idea back in the 70s, and of course, we'll take your questions. Joining me for all that and more is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how are you doing?
I'm great, and you?
I'm doing good. I tried this new, you remember White Claw in the summer, right? That was the whole thing?
Yeah, sure. There ain't Anybody no laws. We need White Claws, baby. Yeah.
Well, there's a Smirnoff version. It's just straight ass. It's just like.
They're all bad, apparently.
Like flat, sparkly water. I don't know how White Claw got it so good, but everybody else is so bad at it. I've never tried the Bud one, but.
My girlfriend, or my girlfriend, Jesus Christ, I'm married. My brother's girlfriend.
What are you? Hold on.
No, my brother's girlfriend drinks Trulies a lot, and I don't like any of them, so I just am confused.
Is that another, like, knockoff one?
No, it's another brand. I don't know. I did have tequila the other night that didn't make my head bleed, which is a first. Seems every time I drink tequila, for whatever reason, I'm hit with a chair. It's very strange. This time, not hit with a chair. So, positives.
It's slowly moving up. I don't know. There's also the, what is that stuff called? It's just like spiked coffee, basically. But that's really good.
Irish coffee or?
It's Pabst, but they have, what do they call it? Hard coffee. That's what they call it.
I didn't know that existed.
But there's like zero alcohol flavor in it. It's just iced coffee, basically. You're not going to hit a chair. But anyway. I'm here to talk about baseball, which is apparently going on somewhere, because as you know, Merritt, the second the Super Bowl ends, baseball starts.
Baseball season, fuck the NBA. You know.
Yeah, right? There's not a whole lot of the sport playing right now or anything. But,
two, in fact. But, it's
oh, yeah, two, hockey, too.
Two major league sports are currently happening.
But I don't know why everybody, I don't know. I kind of posted a thing on Twitter that was like everybody getting ready for their tweets, and then I did one anyway. Because it happens every year. It's been getting bigger every single year that people tweet out. It's baseball season now, despite the fact that...
Well, I just told you why, Matt. I sang a song about it. Right. It's a song called Baseball Season, and in parentheses, fuck the NBA. It's a whole thing.
That's the entire song. Just on loop for 3 minutes.
There's more than that. You know, it's like a Fall Out Boy song in that it has lots of parentheses in the title. So, you know, it just has...
And there's an ooh somewhere in between.
Yeah, there's like ooh. And all that crap, you know. Yeah.
Well, in the limited baseball news landscape we have going, it's always good news for the Indians, especially around this time of the year. Apparently, Yasiel Puig, he rubbed some people the wrong way, apparently. Tony Mazur, who's a radio broadcaster in Akron, he was an Indians luncheon. It was Jim Rosenhaus and Bob DiBiasio. What?
At a luncheon. What an asshole. Go on.
But what was it? So somebody asked if the Indians will re-sign Yasiel Puig, and how do you pronounce his name? We were just talking about pronouncing the name before the podcast. Is it DiBiasio?
Yasiel Puig.
No, not Yasiel Puig. But the Indians PR guy, who's apparently not very good at PR. But him and Rosenhaus both said that Puig beats to a different drum, which rubs Tito the wrong way. And quote, there's a reason no team has signed him yet, which Jesus, I don't know. I don't know if that was meant to get out. I don't know if
right?
We have no way
hell?
To know if Mazur made it up or whatever, but that is quite the thing to say, because first of all, to say that, I don't know, that's not good. And also the implication that the Indians, there's a potential upgrade out there and they won't get him because he, quote unquote, beats to a different drum and it rubs Tito the wrong way. Like, if the Indians can upgrade in the outfield, you deal with it, Tito. That's why you're
childish
there.
Bullshit
that's your whole
is
thing,
what this
is.
Yeah.
Good, yeah, you're supposed to be a good clubhouse guy. It's your biggest thing. Deal with it and sign the guy.
Now, apparently, if his clubhouse method is simply bringing only people I agree with, because everyone loves a yes man, Matt. Everyone. But apparently, if it's a talented person who also makes you not happy all the time, you can't have that around. I mean, never has Terry Francona had some sort of mercurial, let's say, outfielder in his clubhouse ever that caused lots of trouble. And then he still won, let's say, 2 World Series with him. Just to pick a number and also a style of player. Now, I'm not comparing the real Yasiel Puig to this theoretical mercurial. He's a left fielder who wore number 24, theoretically. But, yeah, what the hell? What kind of a thing is this to say? Like, it's just, it's confusing because of the timing. Because also free agency is still happening. And both Puig and Brock Holt are still on the market. Now,
I mean, confusing is a word. Infuriating is another one to use.
Yes.
I mean, confusing is a very temperate word to use about this.
Yes.
Confusing, that's a good one.
Yeah, like I'm angrily confused or mad. I'm mad and I don't know why. No, it doesn't make any sense because it's, I don't know. I can understand that. It's the same thing we've heard about Yasiel Puig since he came in the league, I guess, but I can't imagine
how
he even
really be like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I can't imagine he even approaches the most hard-headed, like, idiot knucklehead in a major league clubhouse right now. And he's talented. I mean, I don't think he's quite as talented as his reputation suggests. Like, if you look at his numbers from 2019, I think he was just right around a league average hitter, but who cares, man? The Indians need those too. They don't just need stars and scrubs. We've seen that flame out too many times. What a stupid thing to let get out. I don't know. I don't even know who to be mad at here.
He's above average, too, which is more than they need. They have a bunch of average. They need slightly above average.
But they have too much below average is the other problem. Or platoon guys,
I think
too.
The other potential route here is that it's not actually anything about Puig and Tito. It's just DiBiasio. I got to figure out how to pronounce his name. It's just basically covering for the fact the Indians don't want to sign him. They don't want to spend money. Because it sounds like everybody in the organization has admitted they're set, despite the fact they said they would spend Corey Kluber's money, but they're apparently set with what they have, and this is a sort of a spin job to say, like, oh, it's because he's too wild. He doesn't want to deal with
Matt, him. Let me tell you something.
He doesn't want to spend money.
I don't know a lot about PR. I've been near it, I guess. But isn't the whole
this
point...
This is not good PR.
Isn't the whole point of spin to direct attention away from, I don't know, management? Like... Like it's
well,
not,
to these guys, Tito is not management. He's below management. These guys are the management up higher.
I
so
get
he's directing
that,
it to the person below him.
Like you should deflect it to a different direction. Deflect it onto the person, not like onto Puig. It's Puig's fault. It's not.
That is what he's saying. He's saying that he's too rambunctious or whatever.
That's not saying that. It's the statement that he rubs Tito the wrong way is, oh, this is Tito's problem, that he doesn't like being around this type of person. These people,
right,
yeah. Puig isn't going to
specifically is really bad.
Puig isn't going to become a different person. He is who he is and has been for, I don't know, he's been in the league like 8 years now or something like that. So, what the hell, Matt? Why this cheap ass piece of shit team? Anyway,
and I figure like this is what we got, right? There was TribeFest over the weekend, and multiple times it was basically said, like, this is the team they're going in with. They feel good about it for whatever weird reason. They seem like they want to get Delino DeShields more playing time, which is depressing.
They've all been taking a lot of ketamine, I think is what it is.
A forest fire. That's how you get through a tribe fest, is a lot of drugs. That's how you work your way through it very slowly, and
yeah,
then you're good. So continuing the trend of disrespecting everything about the Indians, Francisco Lindor was not the top shortstop, according to MLB Network, their top now series, or right now series, with their shredder, which we talked about in the last podcast or the one before, where it's basically like the last two years they go through the stats and evaluate who's the best. And Trevor Story was number one. Francisco Lindor was two. Javier Baez was three, which seems insane to me. I know Trevor Story had that really hot start as a rookie, and then I guess he was good this year, but I didn't think he was like
shortstop
in baseball good.
Yeah, exactly.
He was really good this year.
I mean, he had a great year. It's just, I mean, obviously you discount it because he played in Colorado a little bit, even though that's kind of been muted a little bit, but still that field is so big. Like,
doesn't he have like massive splits away from... I don't, like, you can say for a lot of people it's not a real thing if they're good away, but he was not good away from Coors Field.
Let me review. Yeah, there's a 300-point difference in between their his home and away splits, so there's something to be said there. He hit 13 more home runs at home than he did on the road. Same number of doubles, though, which is interesting, actually, because it's supposed to be a big doubles park. So I don't know what's going on there, but it's strange I mean, hey, you play where you play, and if you're absolutely dominating at home, you can win 60 games at home, and then you know go 500 on the road, and you're a 100-win team. I just thought Lindor was better than this the last 2 years. You know, I mean, we're talking about a combined 11 wins above replacement, 12 exactly wins above replacement, according to Baseball Reference, compared to Francisco Lindor.
I guess it all really depends on how much the shredder weights last year versus the year before, because in 2018, Francisco Lindor was undoubtedly the best shortstop, one of the best players in all of baseball. And then last year, he was still really good, but he started off injured, and then he was just an above average hitter. So I guess it just depends on how much it weights it. But still,
that's what it is, because he did miss some time, and yeah, he was less than 5 wins above replacement this past year. I mean, for the last 2 years, he had more than Story, but it must be a weighting thing.
Yeah.
Lindor did have that interesting issue where he was walking not nearly as much this year as he did in 2018. It's weird to refer to 2019 at this point. It's still this year to me. I don't know. It's strange.
But, last season.
Yeah, this past season, last season. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So he wasn't as good as he had been, but yeah.
Yeah, at least like Brian Kenny and the other humans, they all basically had Lindor as number one. Marcus Semien was up there for some of them. I think Brian Kenny had Xander Bogaerts too, which is kind of crazy considering he is terrible on defense and maybe not the best offensive shortstop.
Yeah, but it seems
like he's tailed off a little bit for, I guess.
With a name like Xander, you gotta value that though, right?
Come on. Bogaerts, that's a really good
come on. First of all,
he isn't terrible on defense, but
you get to enter the Xander zone, and then also Bogaerts kind of sounds like Boggart, as in the thing from the Harry Potter universe. So there you go.
And then the other position they did since our last time talking was starting pitchers, with Mike Clevenger was 9, which is fair, I think.
No, definitely. Did I write that article, or did I just imagine writing where he's been one of the best pitchers, the best Indians pitcher for the last 2 years combined? I mean, just in terms of,
I think we just talked about it. I don't think it was an article.
You're probably right. I haven't been writing very much, so that explains a lot.
Yeah, we talked about it. But I'm glad that Corey Kluber wasn't up there inexplicably.
That would make me mad again, because I would have reminded again that he's not on the team anymore. Yeah,
I think it's not too long that Clevenger's going to be up there in like the upper half, and then Shane Bieber is going to be joining him on the list.
I'm surprised Bieber wasn't on there.
Two-year thing again.
Yeah,
well, it's the two-year
exactly.
thing.
Exactly, right.
Shane Bieber, he was a rookie, and then
next year if you read the article, or maybe it was a Mike Petriello tweet, one of the two.
No,
but
no, read the articles,
man. But who clicks on things anymore? But he was just missed. Oh, it was Bieber. Which tells us, once again, they must wait the more recent year more than the second one, the one prior.
Because if they didn't, he wouldn't even be close. That's weird.
Right, exactly, yeah. And, I mean, he was really, really good. It's hard to say who was, I mean, in individual moments, Clevenger was definitely better, but, I mean, we're talking about a difference of, 80 innings almost, something like that. So, that's a tough row to hoe, as they say, in terms of who was really better. Because if you're a starter, you still got to be out there. And, like, I know that there was that 1 year when I think it was Kershaw only threw like 164 innings or something like that.
Yeah. And Kershaw, by the way, completely off this list. He's not anywhere in the top 10.
Well, he was really bad this past year is the problem. It's kind of stinks. And yeah, 126 versus 240 innings. So that's 70 innings.
Do you agree with what it had for the top? It was DeGrom, Verlander, Cole, Scherzer, and then Hyun-Jin Ryu was 5, which I think is pretty much all fair. I always forget how good Hyun-Jin Ryu is. I just forget he.
I know. I mean,
so much.
Same. I am surprised by that. I just, because he didn't come out of nowhere either. Is the thing. It's just we all forgot about it because he was on the same team as Kershaw and then all those other guys too. But he was their best pitcher in 2019, and he was really good the year before.
He was really good. Yeah.
He just didn't. The thing is, he's kind of made of glass, and he finally put it together for most of a full season 2019, and was. Someone only came in second. Who was Cy Young? Oh, that's right. Jacob deGrom. Yeah. Right. I don't know. I would put Scherzer higher. Living in D.C. as I do, I'm biased, I guess, even though he's not my favorite. He's not on my favorite team, but the guy is absolutely incredible.
It is really hard to break that trio up, though, deGrom, Verlander, and Cole. Like, to get in there, that's really...
I think if I was going to take one out, I would take Verlander out, and I would put Scherzer in there. I know Verlander's been very, very good, and, you know, I like him as a pitcher to watch sometimes. I think that what's-his-name got hurt from injury, so that sucks. But, I mean, hey, you do what you can. I've been surprised that over the last 2 years he was better than Scherzer, but he has been absolutely electric the last 2 years, too. So. Scherzer's been so incredible the last 2 years. It's been truly amazing to watch. He's just such a machine and cool to have in this city with Steven Strasburg, too. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, and it's weird too, like with Dusty Baker going to the Astros now, everybody's talking again about how he used to ruin pitchers or whatever, but Max Scherzer was the pitcher that he supposedly ruined, and then, by the way, he's still amazing as a 35-year-old, which is...
Yeah, he's been...
Which is the craziest thing to me, that Scherzer is still so good at that age, like, and he's always been so good his whole career. There's never been really a dip at all.
No, his worst season was when he was still young, which is what's crazy. And then he won a Cy Young in 2013 at 28, and then he signed, what, with the Nats when he was 30. I was like, that's what a waste of money that is. And he's gone on to pitch, what, 1,000 innings with him with a 2.74 ERA.
Yeah, they're one year away from that deal being over, and they might actually make it all the way through with every year him being worth it, which is crazy.
No, that is what's, because what is he making every year is a thing, too. I love to, like, this 20, is now a Max Scherzer podcast.
$29 million. Right, yeah. Well, we're talking about pitches, but he's making almost $29 million. Like,
well, he made 42 he made 42 in 2019.
Well, they evened it out weird.
It's a weird escalator thing. It's kind of backloaded. But yeah, he's got another 70... He's got basically $70 million left on the deal. And what, he's up in what, 20? In 2 years. So if he averages four wins a season. Four,
he's worth it, right?
Right, exactly. And I mean, in 20, he did that last year when he was healthy. In 2018, only because he didn't pitch 200 innings this year, he didn't get five wins above replacement. So,
yeah.
And then they win another World Series, too. So there you go.
Hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Fox. That's ZipRecruiter.com/VOX. ZipRecruiter.com/Vox. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Now I'm going to turn this next part over to you because you brought this my attention. It's a really neat idea, which
it is.
We could also tie it into Scherzer since this is a Max Scherzer podcast now. This would probably benefit him more than anybody else. But back in the 70s, Chuck Finley, who owned the A's, he had an idea. And Charlie Finley. Why do you call him Chuck? I guess.
Everyone wants to call him Chuck. I don't know.
Isn't Chuck Finley? Didn't he used to play for the Mavericks? Or am I thinking of somebody else?
I think you are, actually. Yes, that's who you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah, Chuck Finley.
Okay.
Him and
Steve
Nash and Dirk Nowitzki. Yeah.
No, Chuck Finley played for the... You played for the Indians.
What?
He was a lefty from...
Who am I thinking of that played for the Mavericks?
Damn, Chuck Finley. You're thinking of...
Michael Finley.
Michael Finley. Too many Finley. Yeah, he played for the Indians for 2 years. Chuck Finley.
Tell us about that idea that he had, Merritt.
So Charlie Finley was a genius. He had many great ideas. He wanted to have a glow-in-the-dark or an orange ball for night games, I think. Anyway, he had all these wild, wonderful ideas. He encouraged his team to grow mustaches, and that's why you see so many great mustaches from those early 70s days. And he built what was considered the final great reserve clause team. They won three titles in a row, I believe, 3 World Series in a row from 72 to 74. And, you know, it's all the guys you can think of. That was Reggie Jackson. That was Rolly Fingers was on that team, I think. I'm just pulling up the roster right now, the 1972 Oakland Athletics. Yeah, Athletics have always had interesting, curious owners going all the way back to Connie Mack. Even now we have Ray Fosse, one of the ugliest men in history, was on that team in 1972. Bert Campanaris, like I said, Reggie Jackson was on that team. Anyway, we can go Vita Blue, Catfish Hunter. Anyway, Vita Blue and also Blue Moon Odom. Anyway, you can cut all this out. He had an idea because his team was going to be absolutely butchered by free agency because he didn't have very much money. And the reserve clause meant that everyone's going to hit free agency. And he tried to sell all his players to make money back so we could rebuild. And the baseball actually said no. You can't do that for the good of the game. So he lost his whole team, and then they went from winning, 90 games in 98. And then between 1974, they went from winning 90 games in a World Series to winning 63 games in 1977, and they didn't win more than 77 until 1987. Anyway, this is all a long way of saying he had the idea that all contracts should be 1 year. Free agency should be every single year for every single player, and there should be no rookie wages, anything. Just, if you're a baseball player, just an absolute free-for-all every single offseason. And, I mean, we remember the, you know, those of us who pay attention to sports remember the absolute, like, psychosis that just surrounds most NBA offseasons in particular. But that's all also weighted by a certain level of, or I think back to, like, the 2010 offseason, you know, with the NBA. Or whenever a bunch of big free agents hit. Imagine that happening every single goddamn year. I just... It's a wild thing to consider. Yes, exactly. Like, especially now, like the amount of money that isn't, like, assuming, like, if we were to assume that revenues would maintain the same, right? And every single team, even the poorest ones, are worth almost $1 billion. And they're pulling in, what, $11 billion a year across the league. And you have guys making, a $500 million contract or something like that. What if that was every single year? It's an interesting thing to think, because would Mike Trout actually sign $60 million deals? Would Would Trevor Bauer get his dream of just signing $30 million deals every year? You know, I mean, there's massive holes here. You know, like if you blow your knee out, you're kind of effed for at least the next year.
That was kind of the ironic thing, is that players, they didn't want it for that reason, but also owners thought he was nuts and they didn't listen to him. And if they would have, it probably comes out to benefit owners way more than it does players, because of the injuries, because players, like, you can just suppress stuff so much easier when you're doing a contract every single year. It was a disaster for the players. It probably would have been gone by now if they did it. But the owners, because of the glowing ball, I think he had neon jerseys was another thing he wanted, but all this crazy stuff he did, the owners just did not take him seriously. And he probably would have saved them a bunch of money. So it was kind of an ironic twist that it was the owners who didn't want this more than anybody.
I mean, again, one of the great owners in the history. You know, in terms of, you know, being a weirdo, he apparently was just some...
Which is how we measure everything, is just being
a weirdo. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, apparently he was just some insurance executive who knew a lot about baseball, because he was not just the owner, he was also the general manager. He just did whatever he wanted. I don't know what it is about Oakland having insane owners of their NBA, of their professional sports teams, rather. It's really great, though. But it's interesting to just look at it and think, because, you know, first of all, I think that the high-end guys would still make a ton of money. Like, I think they would make more money, if anything, because, you know, we've talked about this in the past. Like, why don't the Indians sign X for just a year or two or whatever? Because then you're out and you're free to go and there's no risk. You know, drop a bomb on them, basically. I think I wrote an article about that, like, last year or something like that, a few years ago. But
I don't think players would want to do it, though. I think they would like the long term stuff. I think maybe it would have been a novelty at first, because he had the reserve clause so long, and it was like, yeah, I mean, go whatever, do whatever you want. But, like, going year to year and never being certain, like, I don't think anybody would like that. Like, it wouldn't be, like, good for players. It wouldn't be good for teams either. Fans following teams,
right? Because
you're gonna have a random assortment every year.
You'd very much have fans as fans of players. You know what I mean? Like, kind of like how you do in the NBA. Where, especially nowadays, the player has become larger than the franchise that they play for. But also, it would create an interesting kind of, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Dynamic?
I mean, the word is dynamic. It's a very vague one, though. Because you'd have these incredibly rich guys, but I think the mediocre guy, I can't decide if you would have some sort of weird race, you know, for, like, those 2 to 4 win guys. Those pretty good guys that, like... Like you mentioned Xander Bogaerts before.
Okay, so you don't get stuck with the lower level guys like that.
Right, exactly. Would those guys see their salaries actually buoyed more than you'd think? You know what I mean? Like, or would similarly would, like, first of all, what would this do to pitching? You know, I remember, I think Kyle Boddy was tweeting about this, like, 2 years ago, when Yu Darvish was a free agent. Like, he was just like, he should just sign for, like, a team for, you know, $45 million for 1 year and just go and throw 280 innings or whatever, you know, basically do what CC Sabathia did when he was with the Brewers, but for an entire season. I think you'd see a lot more of that, but also I think you'd see a lot, like, big bonds being dropped on huge, like, bullpen arms.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, is that relievers would be probably the most benefit from this, especially now, because nobody trusts them over multiple years. It's like Craig Kimbrel would be getting a ton every single year before he, like, nobody wanted to pay him for several years. They would have just done it every year. And then Like, because like, you're not going to get any big relievers getting multi-year deals anymore. That's completely done. Because nobody needs that many because they can just cycle through so many as the Indians have done for so long. Like, I don't think you're going to see relievers making a ton of money. And if they had to do a year and you only had so many relievers and you had to get the good ones, I think they, more than anybody, would benefit from it. But I don't think anybody else would. I don't think anybody would like it.
By that same token, you bring this about the Indians, you know, their ability to find, you know, these Jeff Manships or Dan Oteros of the world who just have this one absolutely absurd year. And like, if you did that, then yeah, maybe in this theoretical world of the single year contract, you could cash in on that. But because, as a writer on the website I used to write for would often point out, relievers by their very nature are incredibly fickle because of the ebbs and flows of the thing and the small sample sizes and things like that. Would they actually get that much money? You know what I mean? Like, would there be a sort of natural suppression of it because no one would be like, oh, I don't know if he'll be as good next year. Like, we all want it. We all want the next Mariano Rivera who pitched for 15 teams in 15 different years because they kept throwing more and more money at him because he was good every single year. And, you know, by the end of his theoretical career, he was making $65 million a year. But like you mentioned, Craig Kimbrel or, again, Jeff Manship. Yeah, he has that one great year where he's a workhorse, but then the next year he's not as good. Or Dan Otero, you know, had a 1.60 ERA or something like that one year. And then I think over the next 2 years, it combined like 6.5. I don't know. It's interesting to think about what that would do to the economics of the game. The two articles that we both read theorize that it would massively suppress salaries. And there's definitely that kind of lower rung guy that would be pushed out. But I don't know. I was just thinking about, you know, remember in 2015 or something like that? I was trying to draw a parallel to this when, again, in the NBA, they had that massive cap spike all of a sudden. And you just had people throwing money at, like, Timothy Mozgov and stuff like that. You just had guys, like, incredibly mediocre players getting huge amounts of money.
And didn't they make a rule just to be able to dump them off later on?
Yeah, yeah. They had the whole amnesty rule because everyone was right. Stupid. It was a hilarious rule because it's like, our owners are dumb. We did a dummy. So I guess you wouldn't have to do that. But I don't know. The NBA does have that problem over and over where you have guys who are like, quote unquote, max players, but they're not actually that good of them. You know what I mean? Like, we have to give him this much money. Why do we have to give them this one? Because otherwise someone else will. And you're like, what's going on here? This entire league's run by morons. Right. I wonder if it would end like...
I don't know.
I don't want a salary cap ever, but I wonder if this would be a good example of a place where there should be a salary cap. You know what I mean? Because I like the idea of a league...
Did this?
Yeah, right? Because yeah. Otherwise you would have just... Every 4 or 5 years, when the New York fan base is getting really antsy, they just drop $1 billion, and then they go and win a World Series, and then they just kind of go back to... Investing, yeah, that would be a good point.
Like, if a team just decides one year, you know what, we're going to win the World Series this year, they can just go buy everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that is because you don't just need to get just Garrett Cole. You get all these guys, and next year it's all set free. You could just rebuild for like the next 3 years and pay basically nothing.
But there's no. But the thing is, there's no. That's the thing. There's no rebuilding. There's nothing to build.
Well, I'm saying you just make more money. Like, you spend more money than you probably want to that one year, and then you just cycle down for a couple years.
Right. And I wonder just what would it, like. Well, that would be a really weird league because there'd be no farm because farm systems wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Right. Why would you have a farm system? Would farm systems be entirely independent at that point? Would there be more money in the farm leagues? I don't know.
I think it'd almost be like a barrier. Like, you get the AAA, you reach a certain age, and then you're a free agent in the major leagues.
Because like, yeah, so, and that's what I'm saying.
There'd be no sense to draft and develop. So they're gone after a year.
Right. Exactly. And like, my dad had the point that everyone would be on a quote unquote contract year every year. So you'd get higher quality baseball. But if there's no development, and no team has any reason to invest in development, what would happen? Would the quality of the game go down? Maybe. So
I think it would have just stayed the same because I think it's the way it was a long time ago.
Like, well, it was, but it was the reverse though, because with the reserve clause, you did only sign 1 year contracts, but then you just couldn't sign with him in the next year. You had a non compete clause for all of baseball. But
I'm saying they wouldn't have advanced development to the point that they did, like if they didn't need to. Yeah, like,
right.
They just did the 1 year deals. Nobody would care. You just get the players you get, sign the best ones. That's it. Because it'd be because you wouldn't even develop them over the year. Because who cares? They're going to be gone after the season. So,
I've been reading this like history of the Indians up until 1954, mm-hmm. and I'm only in the first like 25 years. But you know how many times a team just folded? Like, there was a team in Cleveland, and then it closed, it just shut down. And I wonder if that would just happen a lot. You know what I mean? Like, a new guy would come in with a bunch of money, like, I want to run a baseball team. And it's like, boom, I got a bunch of players. Hey, here's an empty stadium that's been here for 3 years. Let's use it.
I'm out.
All right. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not doing it anymore. Oh, can you do that? Yep. I have no reason not to.
The Cleveland Spiders, they sent everybody to St. Louis and they were done.
Exactly. And that's what that, Before them, the Cleveland Forest Cities. They did the same exact thing. They existed for 2 or 3 years, and just, we're done now. So it's just, yeah, that happened all the time across baseball. There would just be, it would be utter chaos. Utter chaos. Things would cave in. Like, by year six, Citi Field would be a smoking ruin because all the angry Mets fans.
And all these random players that nobody knows just coming in.
Mm-hmm. And who the hell is that guy? Yeah, and then just one, so many stars and scrubs teams. My God. And that's why I think there'd be a run on those kind of mid-level guys, because you could just build a team where everyone else is going, you know, spend a lot of money on a couple of stars, but then they got a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
Someone's being smart and spending the money, right? And you figure out a way to moneyball it your own way.
Think about it. We answer some questions now.
All right.
Every Sunday, although today Monday, because we were late, because there was a
big game. It's still Sunday. Shut up. I wonder who will win the big game.
I don't know. I'm going to guess the Chiefs 31-20. That's my
stuff. Oh, fuck that team. I hate them. I hope they never win.
We always ask you on Twitter and Facebook for your questions, and then we answer them because why not, especially in the offseason, something to talk about. So Chris L. on Facebook, he asked, do you expect Reyes to play more than 50 games in the outfield this season? And my answer for this is no, because I think the whole idea of trying Reyes in the outfield is a farce. I think if they were going to, they would have done last year. It's just another cover to not sign an outfielder, because they can say, we're trying it. We're going to see how well he plays in the outfield, but they're not going
to. Oh, God. It's embarrassing.
Although apparently he's came in and there was a best shape of his life tweet. I think it was TJ Zimpi.
He lost 38 pounds and then put it all back out of muscle. Yeah, all right. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you're a DH. You're not going to be an outfielder. They would have done last year.
So what are we looking at right now in terms of left fielders? Lupo, Mercado, Allen, Bowers, DeShields, and Reyes? No, I don't think he's going to play more than 50 games. I think – oh, yeah, Daniel Johnson, too. But like, he's not listed. I mean, I'm just looking at the depth chart on the thing. No, Lupo will platoon. Mercado will play almost every day. Allen, I guess you could platoon him with Luplo, I suppose.
And Bowers is going to play somewhere, and he's probably a better outfielder than...
Yeah, Bowers is probably the second best outfielder on the team right now. Probably one of the two... Right, so I know. Sad. It's a little embarrassing to say things like this, but also it's true. No, I don't think there's any room for him to... I mean...
Somebody hit a lefty, damn it. Just one of you.
Well, that's the thing. Delino DeShields has like okay splits against lefties. He has a 791 OPS against lefties. So that's something. You combine him with Luplo against, what, righties? Or no, he also hits lefties. Shit. Someone hit a lefty. This is terrible.
It's lefty. You can just switch hitter. Bring Jason Kipnis back. He can play center field and you'll be good.
Can we just not say those words, please? So, no, I don't think he will, because it'd be a train wreck. And if nothing else, we'll just have to go with run prevention or whatever. Because the infield will produce a lot of runs.
Yeah.
I mean, we're jumping to the conclusion Ramirez will be fine. Lindor is him. Cesar Hernandez is a top 10 second baseman. and Carlos Santana. Yeah, exactly.
Wasteland, but whatever. You got some good outfielders and you got pitching.
I
mean, you're good.
I think Mercado will be good. I think he'll be a solid, you know.
And Lupo's going to be good for half a platoon. That's about it.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe he'll learn how to hit the other side of the plate. Yeah. I got to look at the splits now. God, he kills lefties. We need someone to hit a righty around here. This is stupid. What a stupid team this is.
So thanks for that question, Chris. Our next one is that Klee Owl Bears. Who asked Cliff Lee, CC, or Kluber, who was the most dominant modern Cleveland Cy Young winner? If we're taking into their account just in Cleveland for their whole Cleveland career, it's Kluber by like a mile.
Yeah.
He had the highest WAR, 34.5. His ERA was the lowest, 3.15.
I think he's at worst. Yeah, Cliff Lee was good for a year.
Yeah, he had the 1 year. He was really slow burn to get there, and then he was super good, and then he left. He was traded. Sabathia, he was good for a while. He started super young, and then he was traded when he got good. So it was just nice that we actually got Kluber's good years, and we probably got into his twilight a little bit before he starts to decline. So, I mean,
it's Corey Kluber is the... Let me just make sure I'm saying this correctly. Yes, Corey Kluber is probably the third best pitcher in Indians history. Grumpy old man, happy guy from Iowa. Early win was also very good. What's that? Sam McDowell was a grumpy old man.
Okay, yeah, I figured.
So, I mean, I'd say he's at worst. I don't know who the fuck Terry Turner is. Who are these guys? He played in like 1904 or some shit like that. Yeah, exactly. He did actually play, started in 1904. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's Feller, McDowell, Kluber. Well, early win, too. I mean, he's in there, too. Great name, anyway.
And I mean, he didn't win a Cy Young, but I put Carrasco above Cliff Lee.
Yeah, I mean, I would too. And if we're talking just Indians tenure, I mean, Cliff Lee was so good once he left the Indians.
I would say
he was probably awesome better than it. What's that?
I said it's great. So happy for him.
I think if you include that 1 year, you're talking about a two-way. Actually, honestly, that's a – how many years is that? 2008 to 2013, a 289 ERA, 140 ERA plus. Does that really stack up that well against Corey Kluber's time with the Indians?
Are you talking Lee or Sabathia?
No, Cliff Lee. Yeah, Sabathia. Not,
okay, I was going
to
say.
So, Lee –
I mean, Sabathia's pretty close to Kluber. He's not that far behind.
Lee's best years came out to a 140 ERA plus. Kluber's came out to a 143. I don't know. I mean, I'd say those guys are a push, but I'd say Corey Kluber is the best. He's still probably the worst of fourth best pitcher in Indians history. And I mean, I'll include early win on that because he did pitch in the 50s too, so it's fine.
Yeah.
He wasn't dominant but yeah.
They also asked on, I feel like I'm missing, oh, there it is. But I asked on Facebook for questions on the top.
Never mind.
I didn't pick any of them because we already talked about it. But like the top five questions were all just basically fuck Paul Dolan in various different ways. Like why?
Question, fuck Paul Dolan? Yes, probably.
So there's a general consensus of how everybody feels right about now, which fair or not, nobody's very happy with India's ownership.
Well, if everyone wants to write in and have me just next time read the backs of cards from 1989, I can do that. I have a Tony Gwynn right here. He was really good in 1988.
At Fudatorius on Twitter, he wants, which one was I going to do? Okay, we're going to say, setting aside payroll considerations, wouldn't a trade for Betts make a ton of sense? The return for Sox may ultimately show otherwise, but it seems like Betts' value for 1 year and Marte's for two are at least comparable.
Yes, 100%. What do you think? No, that's a great idea. No, I've always been in favor of using the time we have now to take advantage of the talent that's on the team. That's 100% a great idea. I love that idea. Who gives a shit about what's in the farm system? I don't. They could all be garbage for all I know. They could all be bad. They could be another series of Jake Bowers's. I mean, fuck it. Who cares? Are you kidding me?
I don't know.
Fuck.
I mean, I'm all for spending money and just buy a free agent. But I like the idea that the Indians are at least not doing deep tanks, because that's what they'd have to do if they deal everybody away. I guess it doesn't matter if you win a World Series, but if they come really close again and then they have no farm system and you had Betts for a year, that looks really bad.
Would have had Betts for a year, though. That was a lot of fun.
I think at least this year it makes more sense than other years. So I think he moves the needle a lot more than like Bryce Harper would have last year, the year before, all these other guys. But I don't know. I'm always in favor of spending money, but the one admirable thing the Indians do is they don't want to go into a deep tank. So I like that they keep their farm system going and pumping, but it also depends on what they get for Betts, because I don't think the trade market for one-year players is going to be there as much anymore. So maybe it would just be like Nolan Jones or something else, in which case, yes, immediately. Slam the trade.
I don't know. I saw one proposal today that was like Verdugo and then some guy whose name didn't look like a real man's name.
Dustin Jeter.
Yeah, like that's Jeter. The one, actually. Yeah, that's not a man. What's going on here?
You're not real. Yeah, so that's a pretty hefty offer, and I wouldn't want to.
It is
that really, but
like I don't know what it would look like. You might have to move, like I don't know, you know, you empty the top five of the farm system. Is it really even that good? I don't know.
Well, like, the problem is the farm system is also far away, so I don't know how much the Red Sox would want that. Good Indians farm system is like double A or below, so I guess I don't know. But thanks for the question. And then
they should have spent more money on free agents. That's my theory.
They should, yeah. That's wouldn't that solve all these problems, Merritt? Don't have to deal with your prospects,
sons of bitches. It would have been nice if they signed Josh Donaldson, that would have been a good one, huh? What do you think of that?
Yeah, that worked out really well. At Slang EUG, he asked, with the Indians scaling back the payroll again outside of the Kansas City Royals, when was the last time a team with a payroll significantly below league average won the World Series and or in the modern era? Have there been any? It's basically, we are the Royals at this point, is what the Indians are.
All right,
are,
so but who's won the World Series in the last 25 years?
Yeah, World so the Series. Problem is, like, opening day payrolls don't go back super far, but I did look it up. So do you want to guess before even Googling?
I'm just looking at a list of champions from the last 25 years just to kind of get a quick idea.
You're gonna realize which one it is real quickly.
So not the Royals, not the Phillies. They were spending all that fucking money. Not the Cardinals. They don't. Oh, yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah, right.
2003?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Marlins. Right. Yeah. And that also in 97, which I couldn't find opening day contracts for them, but I'm pretty sure they were probably one of the lowest. Because that wasn't when they were expansion team, I think, too.
Yeah, they were very cheap. Well, there was a lot. Actually, no, that one actually could have been a little bit expensive because I still remember reading an article about how that team was the pinnacle of the three worst things about baseball at the moment, which was free agency, expansion, and then a third thing. I don't remember what that one was, but it was just like you look at who's on this team, and it's not guys who came up with that team or anything like that. It's definitely a lot.
They didn't exist.
for instance, Gary Sheffield's on that team. So
So
I guess 2003.
And one kind of surprising one, just going strictly, it's not significant below league average, but below league average, the Astros in 2017. That tells you how you get in below average is by tanking and cheating. That's how you do it without spending money. But we're looking at literally four.
I'm surprised the Cubs were so high, were above league average. But that said, I mean, they were spending a lot
Jason
of money.
Hayward, right?
Right. Hayward and then also the Lester Benzo deal as well. Whatever, all their other stars were making dick, you know?
Yeah, the Astros were just purely tank and then re-sign their guys pretty much.
Yeah.
They had Verlander at that point too, which that was just a contract they brought over at the deadline. But yeah, either pay money or be the Marlins or cheat. Those are your options to win a World Series at this point.
Why can't the Marlins just do all three? Wouldn't that be fun? And they just become a dominant team for like 5 years and then get everything stripped away.
Just take off. That'd be my dream. Yes, I want to see them come out of nowhere with Puig leading the charge. I don't know any other Marlins players, which is probably bad.
I want to see a World Series game being
played. Name a Marlins player right now. You think you're a baseball fan, Merritt? Name all the Marlins.
D. Gordon.
That's right. He's not on the Mariners anymore.
No. There was a guy playing second base who I thought was pretty good when I was down there last year.
And Bingo was his name.
Oh, Starlin Castro? Is he on that team still?
Yeah.
I got to look at their roster now. All right, yeah. Miguel Rojas, that's right. Yeah okay. He retired. Let's see.
There was some Twitter account. It might have been Suspetus Family Barbecue was like tweeting. It was like Senators or Marlins players.
Garrett Cooper. Harold Ramirez. That's a pretty good one.
These are just like draft choices in a randomly generated year of MLB 2K, like in 2035.
All right, Matt, how many hitters did they have with a higher than 100 OPS plus in 20?
Last year?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Four. I'm going to go four.
Let's see.
That's a lot. That's like half a lot.
In terms of qualified hitters, we'll just go with qualified hitters.
Okay.
Two. How many pitchers do they have with an ERA plus over 100?
Oh, zero. That's
interesting. Oh, four, actually.
What? They had a good pitching staff?
Jarlin Garcia, a reliever, it looks like. Tyler Kinney looks like a reliever. And then Sandy Alcantara, who was a starter. He's 32 good. Games started, actually. 388 ERA. He wasn't too bad.
He's good.
Not a lot of strikeouts.
Yeah. See, I think we talked about this before. That's also one of the things I like about baseball, is that you can be in your own little silo sometimes. Like, there are these teams that, like, exist on faraway lands to me that I don't even know anything about, like the Marlins. But, like, in football, because everybody plays once a week, you sort of just learn everybody anyway. But, like, you have your farm systems, you have your own team you focus on, and it's kind of fun that, like, the Marlins can come into town with any of those players you named that I already forgot that aren't Starlin Castro. And you get to learn all these new players. It's kind of neat. That.
Listen, I was there for two games last May, and there's just a whole lot of me going, who the fuck? Or the what? It's funny. You can go to Baseball Reference and look at their top 12 players' headshots and kind of blur your eyes a little bit, and they all do look like randomly generated people. It's great. It's fantastic.
On that note, Merritt, I was going to do it for us this week. If you're listening now, if you made it this far, and if you haven't, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read. If we get any new ones at the front, we'll read them up front of the podcast. Mm-hmm. I think our last couple was somebody liked driving, another person was mad at you, somebody else said it was too long, so
good.
Doing great.
Good. I made more outlandish statements and it wasn't too long. So we're one for two, I guess.
There we go. We're going. But if you listen now, just leave us a review. It helps. It helps people find us on iTunes. And until then, talk to you next week, man.
See you.